You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 5th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the map room of Donald Trump's secret plan to win the war, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Driftglass, I've said this many times, I don't want this show to become a parade of GOP clown car. Let's look at the GOP clown car this week, because that gets... That would be boring for me.
Yes, but there's nothing else in the car. This isn't like, shall we say, Repo Man, where there are interesting aliens in the trunk that make the whole thing work. There's nothing but lunatics in the clown car.
Yeah.
Now that, for my money, should be the story. It never is anywhere but on liberal media.
It never is, and the propping up. It is a fascinating exercise watching the media, and I'm specifically talking about Washington Post, taking away from the Democrats and giving to the Republicans over and over and over and over and over again to keep that scale balanced until the election.
Yeah.
Just, we have to keep it both sides. We have to keep it both sides. And because it's so lopsided between crazy and sane, it keeps them constant. It is like Sisyphus, except it's with scales. You have to keep running back and forth.
Yeah.
And taking away from Hillary and making sure that there's some sort of doubt about her campaign. And then, you know, just talking about Rick Perry, like, you know, he's learned a lot of lessons. And,
he has.
It's important to remember that he's healthier now than he ever was before. Okay.
And Mike Huckabee has a populist message that will resonate with some voters. And Rick Santorum.
And this is a week when I just made a list of three things. Mike Huckabee said he wished he was transgender so he could shower with the girls. And as I said on Twitter, I wish I could shower every time someone quotes Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, so, we can't. Yeah. It's a small house. There's a lot of people. But
a lot of people. I don't always get a chance to do that. Rick Santorum said the Pope should leave climate change to the scientists. The Pope has a master's degree in chemistry, everybody. I don't know what else to say. At this point, I just want to step off the planet. Finally, Lindsey Graham is the roughest, toughest, hawkiest GOP candidate ever. My stars and goddess, he wants to take over the entire Middle East. Yeah. Not just part of the Middle East, the entire Middle East.
I gotta give it up I would include, and there's a bunch of things to include in the list. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Scott Walker's rapety rape talk.
Yeah.
Because rape.
If you're pregnant from rape or incest, then you know, you only really care about it at the beginning of the pregnancy.
Yeah, you know, that's not gonna catch up with you at any. And of course the just jaw dropping, but it's all jaw dropping. Mm-hmm. It's all wow, you said that. You white Republican evangelical asshole decided you know what women who've been through this are going through and what they think and how they think and how they process their emotions and the decisions they make as mature adults. But you know better because because the Koch brothers write you big checks and let you run the state of Wisconsin for them. It is quite remarkable, but maybe it was just proximity in time, but watching the clip of Lindsey Graham on The Morning Joe Show. First of all, big compliments to Lindsey Graham for recycling 100%, making his foreign policy out of 100% recycled neoconservative talking points.
It's an eco-candidacy.
It is. It's amazing. The last 15 years never fucking happened. They just never happened. Lindsey Graham, seriously, believes that we should reconquer Iraq. We should conquer Iraq with American troops. We should conquer Syria and hold Syria. We should just conquer and apparently Whoville and Mordor as well. As long as we're there, why the fuck not?
He can't do any of this without a military draft, by the way.
Oh, no, it'll be
everything
fine.
He wants to do.
No,
he
no,
can't do without
of course
draft.
He can't. Because if, as Bill Kristol, who is basically his operating him like a puppeteer, mm-hmm. You know, if you just have the will.
Yeah.
I remember Bill Kristol saying that just right out of the fucking Third Reich. If we just have the will, if we just have the will, we can do it. Yeah, yeah, mein Führer, I can walk. And no one around him stuck a pencil in his neck and dragged him off the stage and said, you could never go on television again, ever. Because he's Bill Kristol, and Bill Kristol is immune from criticism. But Lindsey Graham really did go on television this morning and say, we should reconquer the entire Middle East, and we'll pay for it by Simpson Bowles.
Oh, my God.
The problem is not the military. The problem is the structural debt of entitlements. And so what we need to do is flatten the tax code. And it really
is. Tax cuts for billionaires.
Tax cuts and flatten the tax code and work out the tax and have a Simpson. So, yes, we're going to cut your dad's Social Security, your mom's Medicare to pay for Lindsey Graham's reconquest of Iraq.
Wow.
And the most anybody, and of course, all they had was squint on there. All they had was the amazingly talentless heap of shit named Joe Scarborough. Who was given 3 hours on my liberal television because mm-hmm. Phil Griffin doesn't give a shit anymore. He's turning this place into, he's turning them into CNN and on their way to becoming Fox. The best he could do was say, well, you know, I agree that we made a mistake going into Iraq the way we did in 2004 and leaving Iraq the way we did because both sides. This has to be a both sides problem. And if you look at all the wingnut conspiracy lists, and by the way, WorldNet Daily has a comprehensive one that I'm just enjoying the hell out of. One of the most consistent.
You have to talk about that.
One of the most.
You have to talk about the WorldNet Daily list.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
One of the most consistent modern myths, because these are people who just. The last 30 years has been one long primal scream against reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's. Benghazi and it's IRS and it's a bunch of it just one completely manufactured scandal after another and manufactured and debunked scandal after another. Obamacare is still a scandal to these people. A birth certificate, still a scandal. We're not really sure. We don't really know. And one of them is Obama lost Iraq. We had won the war. It was over. We had won. There was a fragrant Jeffersonian democracy blooming in that benighted place that would have infected the rest of the region and caused a tremendous upsurge in something greatness. The number one recent conspiracy theory at WorldNet Daily and throughout pretty much the entire 40 million crazy Uncle Liberties out there who will vote however, you know, Roger Ailes tells them to vote come 2016, is that Barack Obama lost Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
On purpose, because Muslims, you know, and he's bringing secret Muslims into this country. But you go down this list at WorldNet Daily, and it really is just, this is every email you've ever gotten from your crackpot uncle.
And was it in response to David Brooks saying
yes,
there were no...
it was.
Okay, David Brooks last Friday night said that the Obama administration was remarkably free of corruption and scandal.
Yes.
Which, in reality...
it's true.
David Brooks is right.
Yes. And to be as America's leading Brooksologist,
yes, you are.
I owe it to future historians to point out that every now and then the crackpot right wing of America, which is called the Republican Party, completely loses its shit over David Brooks.
Yeah.
He doesn't just come in from criticism from the left, from crazy lefties like me. No. The right. And going through the comments of this thing about the New York Times is a communist newspaper. It's basically the Daily Worker. And David Brooks is a secret commie leftist commie socialist commie because commie.
Uh-huh.
And this person votes. And multiply this person by 40 million and you have the Republican Party. So every now and then, David Brooks, who is a conservative, says something usually in passing. You know, stuff that just falls below my radar because he's usually on his way from making some terrible, terrible point about both siderism, on his way to lying about recent American history.
Mm-hmm. Or punching a hippie.
Or punching a hippie, yeah, about something that's broken in this country. On his way between these two things, he will let slip that some Democrat somewhere did something good.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was Barack Obama's run a really very scandal-free administration. And the monkey house went crazy. They lost their shit at WorldNet Daily. This little crumb that fell off the table is the obsessed over it. And it filled up the Twitterverse. And it filled up page after page of right-wing blogs. This one little quote acknowledging a fact of reality. Mm-hmm. And to respond to this outrage, squeezed between the ads for gold and seeds and the dire warnings about the Christian concentration camps that Hillary's going to send people to. I kid you not. That's an ad on the site. Is the compendium of, because it is an article of faith among the dregs of society known as the Republican Party, that Barack Obama isn't just not scandal-free. Barack Obama is head and shoulders the worst American president in history, bar none. There's not even a close second. Maybe Jimmy Carter. And because they live in a completely reality-free bunker, and because reality keeps leaking in and scaring the shit out of them every now and then, they have to keep reinforcing the walls. That's the downside. The upside is, it's like an ant farm. Mm-hmm. You can watch them do this. I mean, it's totally transparent. You go to their site and watch these people invent mythology and then jerk off to it as if it's reality, and then watch that bubble up into the Fox News universe and be reported back to them as news.
Well, and then be commented on at Washington Post as being an air or an atmosphere of negativity in the Clinton campaign.
You know, the scandal. The scandal plagued Obama administration.
It may not be scandal, but there is a narrative of scandal that Hillary Clinton must deal with.
Well, it's Cokie's law.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that it's true. It's that it's in the air. And I heard a bunch of ladies at the hairdresser talking about it. So you have to report on it. No, you really don't. Or if you do, you can say, you know what?
It's bullshit.
The Republican Party is made up of con men and meatbags. And that's it. And the meatbags believe a whole bunch of crazy shit because the con men make money and votes off of telling them a bunch of crazy shit. That's the story. But of course, when you say that, you get fired. So you never
say. Well, and people then, I think there's a terror in the news media that if you don't make it a neck and neck horse race with even horses, no one will watch.
Yeah. Yes. And
so it has to be, and they're making so much money.
Yeah.
The networks are making so much money off of the Koch brothers, because where does all this dark money go? It goes to ad buys.
Yeah.
And
it
goes to them.
Yeah.
And if they do get fired from NBC or CBS or wherever they are, CNN, they can go become a consultant for a campaign.
Yeah, easily. And they do. And they just rotate in and out.
I'm a media consultant now. You know, I have it on my resume that I worked for CNN for 7 years. So, hey.
But because the well-known communist David Brooks mentioned in passing, again, between making one terrible point and another terrible point, that Barack Obama's administration has been pretty scandal-free. Someone at WorldNet Daily helpfully compiled all of the scandals of the Obama administration in one place. And you're like, oh.
Let me guess, Fast and Furious.
Yeah, well, of course. But you go to the list, like, okay, that's an email from, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. Oh, these are all the fucking emails that have cluttered up my inbox that have all been thoroughly debunked by everyone. But the sheer weight of them. And this is why when I hear conservatives, even centrists, making shit up, which is all they do anymore, I know it has nothing to do with the story today. I know what they are doing is building a memory for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
Oh my God! Death panels. It doesn't matter how hard you debunk. You can drone
IRS.
You can drone these fuckers with facts all day long.
No.
And like ISIS, they will scatter into the woodwork and come back later. But at no point will they ever disabuse themselves of the notion that there were death panels.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2, 3, 5, 8 years later, it's just a fact, an article of faith, an axiom among the right that of course there was death panels. And it doesn't matter how many times you debunk them. It doesn't matter how many times you spray that pile with bug spray and kill it off. It always comes back. So when I hear another thing being invented before our very eyes, the only time to go after it is right at the moment.
Yep.
This is the great failure of our media. The only time to nip this shit in the bud is as it's coming out of their mouths while they're on This Week or the, while they're on Meet the Press.
But that's exactly the time when they will not
and
do
that's,
it.
And that's Chuck Todd. And this actually goes to a parallel construction between what Chuck Todd said yesterday and what Chuck Todd said in January. Now, Chuck Todd was the political director for NBC News. He runs Meet the Press. He's a terrible, terrible person who's only interested in the horse race. Now, yesterday or the day before, I forget which, on the NBC blog, he wrote about what a terrible strategic blunder it was for Hillary to keep the press at arm's length. And how she really should invite the media in closer because, you know, you can't get her a jugular if you keep them a mile away. Because, you know, she's going to have to deal with us and, you know, we're here and we're going to have to, you have to. Basically, he was begging, complaining and whining and bitching that she's not granting interviews to people like Chuck Todd. That's what liberals are supposed to do. That's what Democrats are supposed to do. Now, remember, this is the same Chuck Todd who, when asked by Lewis Black, essentially, why don't you ask hard questions of people on your show, of conservatives, really, on your show? His answer was, well, if we bark too hard at them, they won't come back. So we don't press them too hard on questions. So there really is this incredibly, once you hold them up to the light, there's this standard by which conservatives get a pass because they're crazy. If you push too hard on Lindsey Graham, he'll break down and cry and run away. If you push too hard on Rick Perry, it'll be obvious that there's nobody home. He's a complete fucking empty suit. He's a moron. If you push too hard at Ben Carson, the crazy will come out. It'll come pouring out of his eyes. So you can't really ask them hard questions or follow up with anything. But Hillary should submit herself to interrogation because it's a strategic mistake not to. And I would only say this. If the Clinton campaign were to say to NBC News, I will absolutely grant you all the interviews you want as long as I start to see stories that the Republican Party is crazy. Because that is a fact. That is a simple, observable, measurable fact. Until you start reporting that the problem with the Republican Party is that it's full of fucking Republicans who are fucking out of their minds, I don't want to talk to you because you have a pre-baked bias against telling the truth if that's not part of your reporting.
Washington Post has an article today about what happens when journalists get interviewed.
Really? Oh, cool. What does it say?
Journalists need to practice what they preach. Okay. And it is sitting down for an interview with a journalist, and they want quote approval, and they want to scan the questions ahead of time, and they want all of the things that they bitch about. And, you know, I'd love to interview Chuck Todd on this podcast.
Oh, sure.
Wait a minute. He's unavailable to me.
Chuck Todd has an open invitation. Anyone in the media.
Anytime.
Has an open invitation.
Anyone who is on television wants to come on our show to be interviewed. We're open to that.
Steve Kornacki, happy to have you.
Yeah.
And if we actually
we've only got three questions for you. Yeah. why, and why?
Yeah. Well, it's like The Walking Dead. We only have three questions.
Yeah. You know? the Huffington Post thing.
Yeah.
Was just about how awful it is to work there.
Yeah, that's all it was. But
that's
it was how predictably awful it was.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the part.
And you know, it's yes, people following the people at the top, and that's it.
Oh, it's sycophants, loyalist, yes men, toadies, and Arianna Huffington running the place like a Stalinist, you know, mini state, keeping people confused, off balance. People suddenly disappear and never heard from again. Here's the list of people we're not going to talk about, not going to say anything mean about. And what a shithole, frankly, the Huffington Post has become. And here's the thing. It wouldn't bother me if it were TLC or TMZ or MOUSE. It wouldn't bother me. But Arianna Huffington took her considerable money and bought the liberal media out from under a bunch of people who were really very interested in telling the truth and
democratizing it
and really reporting and really moving the conversation forward. And she smurfed up all of the available resources and sucked in everyone. And there were a whole bunch of liberal outsiders, including myself, who said, this is going to be a fucking disaster. This is going to be a bad thing. Because she doesn't give a shit about this movement. She gives a shit about making money. And the money right now is in the liberal side. So she's going to steal content from everybody in sight and call it aggregating. She's going to promote liberal or citizen journalism. What she means is, I want you to work for nothing to make me rich.
Yep.
She's going to monetize all that stuff. She's going to brand it, and she's going to sell it. And she's going to turn it into the Stalinist shithole that it is. And surprise, surprise, all these years later, everything we worried about, everything we said, this is what's coming. You let people like this control your media. This is what you get. And this is what we've gotten. So, you know, this is
Well, and since we're talking about money, I'm not sure whether I even want to bring this up, but the Run War and Run people, you know, shut down, suspended their fundraising campaign to draft Elizabeth Warren to run for president. What happens to all that money that supposedly they raised?
How much did they raise?
How much did they raise?
Where did it go? I know that not a nickel of it went to this podcast.
I didn't ask for any of it. I don't want to ask for any of it.
No, but
and if they're gonna donate it to United Way, or even if they're gonna spend it on stuff for Democracy for America, and you know, we're gonna use it for increasing voter turnout, and we're gonna use it to fight voter suppression. Hey,
great, fantastic,
go for it.
But
the black hole that fundraising campaigns are, you know, we should start a GoFundMe page, Driftglass.
We should.
The Ronald Reagan legacy page.
Yeah, we really should. We really, because, you know, he doesn't have enough.
If you really love Ronald Reagan,
You do. We should draft
him. And you know you do.
In your fantasy draft candidate. And again, the whole draft Warren thing wouldn't have bothered me if it weren't for the fact that Bernie Sanders is right there and wants to run.
Well, yeah, it went on past the Bernie Sanders announcement, and that kind of is bad. But also just the fact that she said she wasn't running.
Over and over again.
That's it.
And every friggin' day I'm getting an email from MoveOn.org and
Democracy for America.
Democracy for America, the parallel organization.
Both of which are fine groups of people who I know are on the side of the angels when it comes to issues. I'm not complaining about their reason for being, because we need more organizations like that on our side raising money. But when you raise money, then Caesar's wife, people. Sorry. It really is.
And frankly, this is why I quit at least two liberal organizations in my life. Because they were on the side of the angels at one time. And then they turned into a bunch of squabbling, infighting, let's raise money, 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 money. It was all power struggle, all trivial power struggles on the inside.
Well, and now you're getting, now this is just a free-ranging conversation, but we'll just have that.
Okay.
I had a exchange on Twitter with someone who said that she felt that Democrats who voted for the war shouldn't be Democrats.
Yeah. Okay, great.
And my response to her on Twitter, where you have 140 characters, is, yeah, they offered me that job of deciding who the true Democrats were, and I turned it down because there was no profit sharing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a huge difference between Hillary Clinton and Bill Kristol.
Yeah. There is.
And if you don't acknowledge that, if you lump them together, you're missing something.
Well,
people who voted for the war and now say, wow, that was a huge mistake. I think about John Anderson. Who said when he ran for president against Reagan and Carter in 76,
My first vote.
Said, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was the worst vote I ever made.
Yeah.
It was a horrible. I have to live with that for the rest of my life, that I voted yes on that. And I regret it, and I will regret it till the day I die. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be unforgiving of that. I'm sorry. You just can't, in my book. And
I can be
the Democrats that voted for the war and then write a book saying, we were lied into this. We were given false intelligence by people who wanted to go to war for money. And I will never make a vote like that again.
Yeah.
I will not be fooled again on that score. and then Lindsey Graham.
Right. Well, and I suggested that the title for this podcast be a line from a Will Smith movie I'm not going to see. Mm-hmm. Die with the Lie.
Die with the Lie.
You know, the idea that that a lot of Republicans, including Lindsey Graham, are absolutely adamant that Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, was simply mismanaged. It was a great idea, worthy of pursuit.
David Brooks still clings to that, too. Noble, I keep bringing him up. But
Honorable men. That's my job, Pluga.
I know.
Noble, honorable men who had a noble, honorable cause, who honestly felt that this was the right thing to do, who simply were lied to by their intelligence community or misled, which is categorically untrue, and just mismanaged it. You know, it would have been great if only, you know, the thing had gone that way instead of this way and this other thing had been done. And all of which we live through in real time, and we know that's a lie. So the people who are just not – and this is, frankly, this is where I come down on the Republican Party. The entire Republican Party would rather die with their lies than admit one fucking mistake. The only mistake Crazy Uncle Liberty will ever admit is not conservative enough. We didn't go far enough. We didn't kill enough people. We didn't cut taxes enough. We didn't enact communism enough. Communism cannot fail, Blue Gal. It can only be failed. And we simply failed to push hard enough right. That's categorically different than John Cole, even Andrew Sullivan to a certain degree, although I have deep misgivings about him, who acknowledge, yeah, that was a horrible fucking mistake. Mm-hmm. If your fallback position after you say it was a horrible fucking mistake, I own it, it was a terrible vote, I was misled, I should have known
better.
I'll
regret it for the rest of my life.
And a little add-on that I like to include, nobody voted to go to war. People voted to give George Bush the flexibility to go to war or not as he chose. And that was the mistake, because of course he was going to go. He was going to go from day one. He was going to go from the moment he was elected. He planned to go to Iraq, and everyone knows that now. The problem is people who shift from it was a mistake to both sides. People who simply swap one scam for another to keep their job, to keep their position, to keep their place at the table, and all the while making sure that nobody is allowed anywhere near the table who talks like you or I do. That's what I can't forgive. I can forgive almost anything else, but people who shift from one lie to another, clearly, like David Brooks, clearly to protect his financial interests, his perks and prerequisites, and his place at the table, to protect his book tour, to protect his good name, to protect his... he and his colleagues right to sit at the same place they were sitting 10 years ago, saying the same silly shit they were saying 10 years ago. That is unforgivable. And the people who don't ask them the simple, direct question of how could you say this, people who never, ever put them under the same scrutiny they would give to anybody else, that I can't forgive. Everything else, people make horrible mistakes and they come back from them.
When was the last time you heard the words Downing Street memo on the news?
Downton Abbey, I think. There was a veiled allusion to it at some point.
It's just sad.
It is.
We are seriously running out of time. A couple things. I got a message on Facebook from a woman who was really perturbed at Bible Bitch. And... she has had issues with the Catholic Church. Her mother died, and the church that she felt that her mother had devoted her money and life to charged too much for a mass, funeral mass, and she never walked into a Catholic church after that and has a lot of issues, and said to me, don't push Bible Bitch. It makes you look like a teabagger, in my opinion, and don't assume that everyone has had a good church experience. And I just want to say... I don't. I think I've tried to be clear about that. I think I've said many times that God loves atheists best, and because they are honest and true and good without the carrot or the stick of religion.
Yeah, they do it without
a net. I was so glad that Reza Aslan pointed out on CNN what I pointed out to her on Facebook, which is religions are made up of human beings. And some of them are violent, some of them are greedy, and some of them are awful. And it's fascinating to me when I talk with people who are angry at the church, the presumption that they make that the church comes from God. Mm-hmm. And I, as a Christian, do not make that presumption at all.
No.
So once you define your terms and you realize, no, church is a community of people that agree to do something. And it may be something like prop up a misogynistic system.
Right.
It might be feed the poor. It might be
slavery.
Have a gay pride parade. It might, you don't know. You know, it depends on the human beings involved and what they decide to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can have a conversation about that with our terms straight, that religions are made up of human beings. And Risa Aslan brought up something that I didn't know about, but our 16-year-old son did, that there's a pack of Buddhists who are massacring people in the world. And, does that make Buddhism a violent religion? No, it doesn't.
A sentence I've never heard anyone say on television or anywhere, fucking Buddhist, man.
Fucking Buddhist,
fucking
man.
Buddhist. You know how they are.
And so it is the human beings that make up the faith and the religion that decide to do something. I am sailing on the boat with you if you want to point out the people and the institutions created by people that decide to do things that aren't right, that decide to use God talk to prop up misogyny and homophobia and racism and bigotry.
Uh-huh.
Amen. Whatever religion that is. And then I just want to take a second to I'm not going to get into the details of it because it's so gross. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the Duggar story.
Can I add one thing to the Bible Bitch?
Yeah, go ahead.
Express. Mm-hmm. The one place where liberals writ large have failed as a movement, an ideology, a group, is talking about faith.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We talk about it a lot. There are lots of liberal Christians. There's lots of liberal Jews. There are a lot of liberal Buddhists. There are millions and millions and millions and millions of people who are dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore, leftist, commie liberals, just like David Brooks, who are church-going Christians, mm-hmm. And church-going Jews and temple-attending Muslims and Zoroastrians and on and on and on. Our public square has been dominated by Phyllis Schlafly, yeah, and by Jerry Falwell, and by saying we're not going to have that conversation, you leave the entire faith conversation, you turn it all over to terrible people who want to do terrible things with it. So I think it is an obligation of liberals of faith to talk about their faith when they feel comfortable in the venues where they can, in a way that makes it clear that I don't agree with those people. Those people have it wrong. They're doing bad things with my faith, and I wish they'd fucking stop.
Well, now you've segued right into a very brief Bible bitch.
Bible bitch.
That's not scriptural. Might as well read this from Luke. This is what Jesus said to the conservative religious institution of his day.
To Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum. Let's be clear.
Well, that's how I interpret it.
Uh-huh.
But if I just read it without interpretation, I think you'll get what he's saying. I don't think you need to interpret it. I think it's clear.
Okay.
This is from Luke 11. You're hopeless, you Pharisees. Frauds. You love sitting at the head table at church dinners. Love preening yourselves in the radiance of public flattery. Frauds. You're just like unmarked graves. People walk over that nice, grassy surface, never suspecting the rot and corruption that is 6 feet under.
Boom.
Boom. Drop mic.
Uh-huh.
Again. Drop mic. Okay. I wanted to talk about the Duggar situation.
Yeah.
Because I have heard from more than one person this week about this happened to me, those kind of emails.
Uh-huh.
And you and I know people, are close to people, have had experience with situations where this kind of abuse has occurred.
We both do. Yes,
both
we do.
Uh-huh. And people are incredibly, human beings are incredibly resilient people.
Mm-hmm.
And resilience is not something that one wants to choose necessarily, but It is something that I that never fails to impress me. Mm-hmm. Let me just put it that way. So I think last week, you know, we talked about it in a macro sense, and I haven't wanted to talk about any personal things or family things because I don't think that's helpful from the standpoint of how I respond to something as opposed to how someone else should respond. I think you get into a lot of how should an individual respond to things, mm-hmm. and there is not a one-size-fits-all
no.
way to respond to things. But we did talk about it in a macro sense of patriarchy and reality TV and so forth, and I wanted to just mention it in a micro sense of the individuals that have had situations like this, or where this coming out in the public square now is opening up memories, if not wounds. You're not alone. I think a lot of people are aware of that. Mm-hmm. It is incredibly, and when I say incredibly, I mean credulous, as in belief. It is beyond belief how frequently this happens.
Uh-huh. And it's
beyond belief.
And it's it is a characteristic. And if you read M. Scott Peck's The People of the Lie,
mm-hmm.
it is
mm-hmm.
a characteristic of I go right along with people being resilient. We shouldn't have to rely on the resilience of people.
Yeah.
I believe that the bad people who cause these things, or the broken people who cause these things, need to be punished or rehabilitated or taken out of, you know, public circulation. There's no excuse, and there's no and punishment and judgment should accompany rehabilitation and healing. But it is amazing how consistently families that are broken, that are deeply dysfunctional, that are built on a lie, are built on a public lie, maintaining a public face, all act remarkably similar.
Yeah,
They're all hysterically pious. Mm-hmm. They all take mm-hmm. what they have done, their sins, the things they're hiding within their own family, and project them outwards on the universe. And they get mad at the universe for being imperfect. They are rigid. They're unforgiving. They're brittle. And they all stick to the fucking script. And
yeah.
It is amazing how much that characteristic crops up in our society. And those people are become pillars of the community because they're unblinking, robotically pious people who instantly judge others and instantly condemn others and will show up at every anti-gay rally within 1,000 miles.
And when one of them is found to be lacking
uh-huh.
or is wrapped up in scandal or sent to prison,
right.
There's another one to pop up like a weed,
and they will forgive members of their own tribe almost
mm-hmm.
instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he's yeah. one of the good ones. You know, the blood mm-hmm. of Christ. You know, and shed a few
washed
tears.
In the blood of the Lamb is that? That's me.
Yeah.
And actually, we were talking this week about that congresswoman from Wyoming or Montana. Mm-hmm. She's passed away now. She died in a car crash.
Uh-huh.
She had a 7-year affair with a married man, and was one of the leading voices for the Clinton impeachment.
Uh-huh.
And she literally argued, yes, the reason that we should impeach Bill Clinton and not me is I was not in public life when this happened.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Clinton was in public life. Also, I have prayed and sought the forgiveness of God and received it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she said that to a reporter.
That,
I have sought the forgiveness of God and received it.
That blood of the Lamb detailing and car wash, you know.
Guess what party?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a revolving door, you know.
Yeah.
Commit an atrocity, you're forgiven. Commit an atrocity, you're forgiven. Say one nice thing about Barack Obama, you are cast out.
Mm-hmm. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Buster. As in, he who busts, he has busted his favorite chair so that it belongs completely to him. No one else would ever sit in this because he destroyed it for himself. You can go visit him and his beautiful, beautiful chair at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. And people wrote to us this week looking for a way to donate money via their phones. And that's not real easy for us to find. But if you have any way to send money to an email address through your bank or through any other phone app, mm-hmm. You can send money to proleftpodcast@gmail.com and we'll get it. I mean, that's an email address that is valid and useful to us.
A sack of unmarked bills sent to us anonymously is appreciated. Yeah. We'll take that any day of the week.
Feel free to write to us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. We got a real quick note from a person that wants to go by Sandman. Driftglass and Blue Gal, keep up the great work. Your podcast is my island of sanity every Friday. Thank you. Hey, we appreciate
happy to do
being your island of sanity.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. Shout out to Sea Realm Podcast. They mentioned our gourmet coffee guideline and mentioned us by name on their podcast last week.
Thank you, Sea Realm.
If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Someone did send us a Dunkin' Donuts gift card this week, which... Okay. We don't need you to send us coffee. Sure. Actually, when I say the gourmet coffee guideline, I mean, I appreciate the card, but we don't need it. We have coffee. We need money to pay our electric bill and our cable bill. So deeply appreciate the gift card someone sent to us. But when I say gourmet coffee guideline and buy us a coffee, I didn't mean that literally.
It's a metaphor, people.
It's a metaphor, people. Uh-huh. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast, which is an island of sanity for many people, with a contribution. You can do it, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal addresses are there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you.
Thank you. So, Blue Gal, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
The internet kitties can't wait. Draft Elizabeth Warren, president of FIFA.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right. Science Fiction University comes from our friend Dogface Herman. Thank you.
Thank you, Dogface Herman.
He wants to talk to us about MacGuffins, which I just love MacGuffins, don't you?
Oh, I couldn't live without them.
Yes.
As a writer and a patriot.
As a writer and a patriot.
I couldn't live without MacGuffins.
MacGuffins are, the word comes from Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
Who always had a MacGuffin in his movies. And a MacGuffin is a plot device. It is the thing everybody wants. It's the microfilm or the briefcase full of drugs or the money. Or the girl. Very often it's the girl.
It's the girl. Find the girl.
Find the girl. Yeah. Find the girl.
Yeah, that's Chinatown.
Chinatown.
The whole plot is find the girl.
Find the girl. So,
Pulp Fiction, it's the briefcase full of gold.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
Or whatever's in there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's the thing that everyone wants, and it keeps the plot going because, of course, whatever that thing is the thing that people move around and chase each other after and so forth. So... Mm-hmm.
MacGuffin plus peril plus countdown clock equals movie.
Plus pretty girl.
But that pretty girl.
Got a pretty girl. Yeah. So there you go. Mm-hmm. All right. So Dogface Herman says, the MacGuffin is a plot device when used by a clever writer can propel a story to great heights. Sometimes, mm-hmm. however, it can kill a story. Yes, it can.
Yes, it can.
Here are some stories using a MacGuffin. All right. Fantastic. These clips all mention what the MacGuffin is in the story.
And by the way, I like it when Science Fiction University is also a little bit of a writing class.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's kind of fun that way. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Number one, tell us the movie and what the MacGuffin is in this movie or TV show and what the MacGuffin is in this TV show or movie. Okay.
All right.
Number one.
Life here began out there. Those are the first words of the sacred scrolls. And they were told to us by the lords of Kobol many countless centuries ago. And they made it perfectly clear that we are not alone in this universe. Elosha, there is a 13th colony of humankind, is there not?
Yes. The scrolls tell us a 13th tribe left Kobol in the early days.
Well, that is the inimitable Edward James Olmos.
Mm-hmm.
And that is obviously Battlestar Galactica, the good one, not the crappy one with Lauren Green.
No.
And the MacGuffin, as always, is Earth. We must find Earth.
We must get back to Earth. Right.
Lost World. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Number two. One of my favorite movies, by the way.
Okay.
What you got in the trunk?
Oh. You don't want to look in there.
Give me the keys.
You shouldn't have told me that, Blue Gal. This is obviously Repo Man, which is a wonderful, wonderful movie with so many good things in it. The MacGuffin is the Malibu's. But the actual bodies, the alien bodies in the trunk.
The highly radioactive dead aliens in the trunk of a 64 Chevy Malibu. Absolutely.
And what? A plate of what?
A plate of shrimp or a plate of shrimp?
It's just a grand
you
movie.
You have to
please. Dear Hollywood, please don't remake Repo Man.
It is perfect as it is. Leave it as it is. It's just perfect. All right. And great soundtrack, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. Number three.
22 hours, 59 minutes, 57 seconds.
We talked about 24.
In 22 hours, the Hartford Summit meeting will be over. China and the Soviet Union will go back home. Now, the president was on his way to this summit when his plane went down. He has a briefcase attached to his wrist. The tape recording inside has to reach Hartford in 22 hours.
What's on it?
Do you know anything about nuclear fusion?
All right.
It's the survival of the human race, Plissken. Something you don't give a shit about.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. This is... Plissken gave it away. That's that's Snake. Call me Snake, Plissken. In Escape from New York, which was... terrible movie.
Okay, I'm going to ask you if that's like a good bad movie. Or
it's a good
bad,
bad
movie. Yeah,
it's a good. It's so bad. I mean, it's so wildly over the top. But I like it. I liked Escape from L.A. or whatever it was. Those kind of movies I just have a very soft spot for and very forgiving of. And the MacGuffin is the missing nuclear thingy.
Mm-hmm. The thing that's handcuffed to the president's wrist. Briefcase with. Nuclear stuff in it, yeah.
Uh-huh. And the countdown clock is the poison that they inject into Snake Plissken.
He's got to find out what's going on before the poison takes effect, which happens in a number of movies, actually. Yeah. All right, let's try number four.
I suppose you're wondering what you're doing here.
It had crossed my mind. What's it all about?
A lot of people are curious about what lies behind your resignation. You had a brilliant career. Your record is impeccable. They want to know why you suddenly left.
What people?
Now, personally, I believe your story. I do think it was a matter of principle. But what I think doesn't really count, does it?
Oh, number four. Number four is a TV series everyone should watch. It's Patrick McGoohan in The Prisoner, which is a wonderful
one. That'd be a good one to just run in the summer.
Yeah, it would.
The month of July, just sit in front of the TV and watch The Prisoner.
Prisoner, every episode in order. There's a story that... Rover, the big white ball that became the symbol. That wasn't the MacGuffin. I'm sorry. The MacGuffin is Who's number one?
Who's number one, and why did number six resign? Yeah, yeah. The mystery of why he's even there in that world. Yeah.
And this is, I believe this is the after show of Secret Agent Man. Patrick McGowan's, I believe, if I have this correct, he was the guy in a Secret Agent show.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, and then he quit. And why did he quit? But the rover in this is, if I understand correctly, they actually built a rover. They actually built a robot to enforce the borders of the village. That they test drove it into the ocean and it sank like a rock. Then they're screwed. They got nothing. What are we going to do? And somebody came up with the bright idea of using weather balloons, just getting a shit ton of weather balloons.
That are relatively cheap, comparatively cheap, yes.
And they break every 2 minutes, but you get 100 of them and you fill them with water or helium or whatever to give the floaty effect. And it became arguably the most memorable symbol.
And terrifying.
Show. Yeah,
because you
really
don't
was.
Know what it, who controls it or what it is or how it can destroy you. Yeah.
But it was one of those very, very serendipitous things that really added to the series' overall weirdness. But yeah, and I'm not going to tell you who number one is because you have to watch the show.
All right. Number five, Dogface Terman says, why? Just why? And that's all I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
Number five.
Why does the sun come up? Or are the stars just pinholes in the curtain of night? Who knows? What I do know is that because you were born different, men will fear you, try to drive you away, like the people of your village.
Oh, okay. That's Sean Connery as the Spaniard for some reason. In The Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan.
And why does Dogface Terman say, why? Just
because why? Why? Would, and it's Christopher Lambert, I think?
Yeah.
It was turned into a TV series. The MacGuffin is the one.
Yeah.
It's well, the prize at the end. You have to kill each other. But the only thing that was funny about that show was a friend of mine who used to call them Duncan McDonut of the Clan McDonuts. So I just, for some reason, that tickled the hell out of me at the time. It still does. But yeah, it was just.
Someone sent us a Dunkin' Donuts gift card this week.
Thank you very much.
We'll get coffee with it or something. Yeah.
And it reminds, the Highlander, actually, it's weird because I was fiddling with Photoshop earlier this week and I thought the Highlander, if anybody remembered what the hell it was, would be the perfect symbol for the Republican primary.
Why?
Because in the end, there can be only none. Because it's this sword fight among goofs who really
none of them can wind up at the top. So too bad.
Yeah, sorry, dude. but the craziest one will end up as one of the final combatants. I watch the series every now and then. It was just goofy and just goofy enough to last. So please don't remake this. Just let it slouch off to its unquiet grave and never make it back into the realm of men again.
Okay, number six is just a musical interlude, but you'll understand why it's included and see if you can guess the show and the MacGuffin.
I watched this whole series right up until it went completely off the fucking rails. And
I think this is the only time, and we weren't quite dating at this point, but it was the only time you actually hung up on me on the phone.
Yeah.
Because Lost was getting ready to start.
Yeah.
Like, gotta go, bye!
Gotta go! Lost! I think this is why it was one of the reasons I was laid off from the last full-time job I ever had. I was the in-house Lost expert.
Oh.
They'd come to me the day after because there was a little cult of Lost Watchers and ask, what the hell was that? And I'd say, well, that's a reference to a Vonnegut novel. That's a reference to this science fiction trope. This is the island from Jonathan Swift or whatever it was. Or I'd make some shit up. They could never tell the difference because, you know, like so many people who know half a lot of trivial stuff, if you just make up the rest and sound like knows you're talking about, you can get away with murder. But this was Lost, and the MacGuffin was every fucking thing. It was the whole friggin' island. What the hell is that island doing there? Why is it there? Where's it going? Ooh, it's gone now. It came back. And it became really clear in the last two seasons that the writers had no idea what to do with what they had created at all.
They didn't expect it to last. They didn't expect it to catch on.
they had tossed up so much oddball shit mm-hmm. on the wall, and they had foreclosed in public interviews, which is a mistake Matthew Weiner never made with Mad Men. They foreclose certain possibilities because you suddenly have a bunch of fans and they're all expressing theories and they're all wondering what's going on. Are they people dead? Is this heaven? Is it hell? Is it whatever? And they said it's absolutely not this or this or this. Mm-hmm. And then they had painted themselves into a corner where there was no other way out but either having Patrick Duffy come out of the shower.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I would have given him credit if they do that. Or have Bob Newhart.
Yep, wake up with Suzanne Plachette. Yes, that was pretty much that's it. Our thing. Yes,
it was all a dream. Or take one of the plots that they had sworn this was not that to their fans and say, oh, yeah, we lied. It was that all along. The last couple of seasons were just dreadful. It just ran wildly off the rails. But up until that point, it was a very interesting show and was doing really innovative things. It had one of the most diverse casts on television at mm-hmm, the time. Mm-hmm. And I liked it.
All right. And here's a bonus clip. See if you can guess what the movie is and what the MacGuffin is. This is kind of a hard one.
Gangsters have stolen my secret recipe for egg salad. And not only that, they kill, they maim, and they call information for numbers they could easily look up in the book. Here is their leader. The recipe is being held in the safe of this bozo, Shepherd Wong. By withholding the recipe, he intends to keep us off the globe, but I say to him, fat chance.
Okay. This is the 60s.
Yes.
This is dubbed.
Yes.
This is, this
good.
Is...
Good. You're very warm now.
Yeah. This is... What's new?
What's up, Tiger Lily? Yeah. Woody Allen.
Woody Allen's experiment with it, which is a very good experiment. It was a very interesting movie. I liked Sleepers better.
Sleeper, yes.
Truly a science fiction movie that was. And the MacGuffin is the what is already said in the clip. Egg salad. Uh huh.
Gotta have some egg salad. I like egg salad. Oh wait, that's me. That's me crossing over.
Although, if you're going to do repurposing old movies, mm-hmm. I really do prefer Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
That is such a good movie.
Yeah, and it was under loved and appreciated at the time. But Steve Martin's Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, I haven't seen it in a long time. But as I recall, a very fine movie and really clever and innovative. And I like that about it. It really did use its full imagination. To tell it, mediocre story, but the story wasn't the point. The point was how many different old detective movies can he stitch together into some kind of friggin' plot?
Yep.
And it worked really well. So.
Yep. Yep.
Well,
and,
thank
and
you.
Really good. Yes. Thank you, Dogface Terman. This
thank
was
you very
excellent.
Much.
Excellent.
Wonderful. Uh huh.
We just have a couple of minutes, uh-huh. like literally 2 minutes.
Okay. That's my heads up, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you want to talk about Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I'll talk about Game of Thrones for 2 minutes. It was a good episode. It is. I told Blue Gal if I could screen one TV show, one episode from one TV show at Netroots Nation, which we're not going to this year.
Yeah, we can't go. I'm sorry, we can't go to Netroots Nation, but kids are home and it's on the other side of the country, so.
And it's Phoenix in July, so.
Yeah, well, it's that too, but we just can't.
Logistics and so forth. We just can't make it. It would be this last episode, Hard Home.
Why would you want Netroots Nation to see this episode?
Because there is squabbling. The entire last few seasons have been the squabbling and infighting and backstabbing and politics of mm-hmm. everything south of the wall. Mm-hmm. With this threat hanging over everyone that's never explained to anybody, although it's clear in the book, something really bad is coming. Something that will overwhelm everyone and will put all the other crises that you have in the proper context.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't band together, and there's this wonderful little speech by Jon Snow about we're not friends. He's trying to recruit an army of people that he's been at war with for generations. We're not friends. We're never going to be friends. This is about survival. This is about I think he said putting a 700-foot wall between you and what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much squabbling and infighting and over legitimate issues.
Mm-hmm.
But it is exhausting to try to convince people who should be more interested in the existential threat that, frankly, conservatism poses to this country than their own issues. And they got it. And this thing shows in graphic terms. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who's listening and hasn't seen it yet. In graphic terms, oh, this is what they meant when winter is coming.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
This is what the enemy looks like. Holy shit!
It's gonna be so bad, and it does dwarf everything.
Yeah. And it was well shot. It was well done. There was one part that I think you and I both said, "Why aren't you rowing?" Why the hell aren't you running away as fast as you can? And that was just a directorial choice. You could have the protagonist and antagonist look at each other.
Yeah.
And have the antagonist do something so terrifying.
Yeah.
That you realize, oh,
this is so bad. This is really, really bad.
This is so much worse than everything we just saw, because now, I see.
Okay.
This is very bad.
This is horrible.
And just as a way of threading a bunch of plots together, having our two of our leads finally meet each other and talk about politics the way grown-ups should talk about politics, you know, about how power should be used. And yes, you're a terrible person, but you're our last hope, because you will prevent something more terrible than you from happening. And it was a very mature show and a very wise show in terms of politics, and it was really cool in the way it paid off everything that had come before.
Well, and particularly what I want to do now is go back and watch the very first episode of Game of Thrones, which is when you first see the White Walkers.
Absolutely, yep, you should.
And the little girl with the glowy eyes.
Yep.
And you didn't quite know what was happening to her, and now you do.
And there's that speech that Tyrion speech. He talks about all of he wants to go see the wall and, you know, piss off of it.
Yeah.
But he's sort of mocking people. Yeah. All the imaginary horrors that they were talking, the grumpins and the monsters and the White Walkers that we used to scare children with.
Mm-hmm.
Because that couldn't all be real.
Yeah.
Yeah. It turns out it's real.
Yeah. It turns out it's real.
Dogface.
Wonderful.
Sherman, thank you,
Dogface Sherman. And we'll see you next week with more Science Fiction University. Yay!
Love you, baby.
I love you, too.